Fan on Demand. He's talking about what you're talking about, only in a much more eloquent manner. You're listening to Primetime Sports with Bob McGowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Second hour of the program is about to commence. It's a Thursday here in Toronto. Hope you're having a good day wherever you are across the country, around the world. Alex Anthopoulos, the Blue Jays Senior Vice President, Baseball Operations and Managing General, will join us in just a few minutes. John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports as well. Baseball talk principally this hour. Then next hour, two really good matchups in the National Football League this weekend. Maybe you could get better matchups, but I'm not sure. You had four great matchups, certainly among the quarterbacks in the last round, and these four all worthy of being in the conference championship games. We'll talk to Banks about that, and then Glenn Healy, Hockey Night in Canada, will join us. Some more hockey talk for you. Brent's in here. The Toronto Blue Jays agreed to terms with Chris Getz on a minor league contract today. Who he?
He's a guy who's kicked around. He's played.
Oh, yeah. He played with the White Sox a bit, didn't he?
Yeah. He's a bit of an insurance policy, middle infield insurance policy, depending on what they see in Ryan Goins or whether they make another move for a second baseman before the season. But somebody's going to play that position. And, you know, he's a guy that he could be the 25th guy.
Could be. Yeah.
And unlike, you know, right now you'd say, you know, Kawasaki might be the 25th guy. But. Well, you know, they're going to have to. They've got to find a place for Goes, who's out of options. They've got a bunch of.
Who's the 24th guy?
Last year.
See, you know what this team has missed. One of the things they missed last year, in my opinion, I've mentioned this previously, and I'm very big on this, is a bat, a real bat, off the bench. I don't care about defense. I mean, you need a middle infield. You need a third middle infielder, right?
Yes.
A guy who can play either second base or shortstop.
Yes.
You need one of those guys for late inning replacement kind of stuff.
And you need a fourth outfielder.
Now, your fourth outfielder could be a big bat,
too. He could be, yeah.
But traditionally, they've gone with guys who aren't big bats, either speed guys or guys who were defensive or young guys who didn't really have the chops yet to be a starter. Now, who's that guy? Who's that guy off the bench when you need a bat?
Well, you know, DeRosa had a kind of a deceptively good year last year. His pinch hitting numbers were really good. So he, you know, he's not the guy he was earlier in his career before he got hurt. But he had a pretty decent offensive year. The problem was at various times Mark DeRosa was in the starting eight because they needed him. And, you know, there were not a lot of options. Kawasaki could come out and grind out an at bat. But they did not have – John Gibbons didn't have that guy that was going to scare anybody off the bench. But I'm not sure.
I know they're hard. They're not like anything. They're like all pieces in the puzzle. They're difficult to get. But it just seems to me that this organization has ignored that factor and principally gone with guys who can play a position if they need it. And my evaluation is if somebody goes down, you're not looking – down the bench for a long-term replacement. You're either going to the minors or you're looking for a trade if you need to do that.
Yeah.
Those are the two kinds of options.
Now, I guess part of the
when
issue.
When Reyes went down,
yes,
immediately what did Anthopoulos do? Got on the phone, called everybody.
Yeah. Now, that was one of the issues that at Buffalo at that level last year, they didn't have a lot of major league ready position guys. You know, certainly infielders. They just didn't have that Negrich there, but they didn't really have a lot to draw from. You know, the organization was thin at that level, just under the 4A level, you know, and they didn't have a ton of options. But it's, you know, I understand what you're saying though.
I acknowledge it's not easy to get. Maybe we'll talk to Alex about it.
But, you know, I think
we'll see what his take on it is.
Other thing is, Bob, they thought Bonifacio was going to hit, and there was every reason to believe he would.
That's a good point.
You know,
yeah.
They thought his tourist would be better offensively than he was. So, you know, they got stuck with two guys at second base, neither of whom produced. And Bonifacio was a huge surprise. Didn't produce at all, at least when he wore the Toronto uniform. So, you know, if he's the offensive player that you kind of thought you were getting, maybe it would have been a little bit different. But there were a bunch of times late in games, pinch hitting situations, you thought, boy, I don't know if it's even worth doing this. Given what's sitting there, you might as well just, you know, forget about it. Forget about the matchup. Just, you know, just leave the guy in that you've got in there.
Well, that's what they had to do most of the time.
Yes.
They didn't really have an option.
No, there weren't a lot of options.
You look down the bench and you got a bunch of guys who are hitting 220.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, it's, you know, again, I think they were boxed in. You know, I think they were positionally boxed in last year, and then Reyes getting hurt boxed them in further. And so we'll see. You know, remember, and Laurie was hurt. So they, you know, infielders, they needed a lot of, they went through a lot of infielders last year, if you think about it.
Oh, sure. Well,
so we'll see. But this is, again, if Getz is your starting second baseman going into the year, it's probably not that great a sign. You know, right now that this, you know, certainly the assumption seems to be, just from, you know, listening to the team, is that they're going to give Goins a chance to win the job, and understanding that he's a plus defensive player at that position, and then, you know, they got Kevin Seitzer working with him, trying to make him into a reasonable major league hitter. But right now, he would be the ninth guy in your batting order.
So we'll get more baseball talk in the next little while. So let's put that aside. We'll talk about Kershaw, and we'll talk about, you know, Rasmus and Rogers and Cecil, the three guys that are going to arbitration. And what else do you want to talk about?
What else? I've been away, right? I missed the biggest soccer week in Toronto history. I wish I'd been here.
Really, what happened?
did you enjoy that?
Yeah.
I thought it was one of your Spurs guys. They bring
in
Spurs.
Well, but he was a Spurs bench guy now.
Well, he
got a goal on the weekend, I guess.
He is a very, very talented player.
Was.
He is a very, very talented player. He's not over the hill. You know,
he was a talented player.
He is an enigmatic striker, and there's a lot of those in soccer.
Look, I don't know enough about the game to know whether two guys like these two guys, even if they play to the level of their press clippings, can be impactful. I just don't know. I don't know how much of a change that makes.
I guarantee you they'll be impactful. They're both, you know, they're guys who are playing at the highest level of the game. Bradley is a guy who will just solidify everything. He's a guy who will just kind of hold things together. He's a solid, tough, terrific player.
So do these two signings in your mind make them a playoff team?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I think so.
Oh really, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. No. I think that anything else would be a huge letdown. No. You know, people can get
hurt.
Well,
I do get. I mean, look at. I'm not asking if they are capable of making the playoffs. Does it make them a playoff team?
Well, put it this way: there are different ways to get to the playoffs in MLS. There are different ways to build teams in MLS. We've seen that over the years. You know, you don't have to go, you know, overcommit to designated players in that league necessarily. You can build a team but they've, you know, the Toronto FC has not done a great job of that. But if you take, you know, two players of that caliber, I'm not sure there's another team in that league that has two players of that caliber in their starting 11.
I get all that. I just don't know what that means. See, I know that if you bring one stud guy into any NBA team, it makes them better. If you bring two in, you might have a chance at being a champion. It doesn't work that way generally in baseball. It doesn't generally work that way in football. It doesn't usually – it'll help you in hockey. It can help you to a great extent. But, you know, the bigger the roster, the less impactful two guys are. And then there's the nature of the game. This is a game in which there is not a huge amount of scoring. And so if scoring prowess is what you need and you get it, potentially I guess it can mean a lot. But that individual, in this case that's Defoe, would be the offensive guy.
Yep.
Has to produce.
And they brought in the Brazilian guy with Gilberto too, so they've got a couple of guys.
I heard that maybe they were going to get rid of him now.
Well, they haven't said that yet. So until they do, I'm going to assume they're both there. you know, the most influential player on a soccer team generally is going to be a guy in the midfield, kind of the midfield quarterback, the guy who plays the Zidane role, or that kind of who kind of, you know, directs things the from the back to the middle to the front. Jermaine Defoe is going to have to get service. He's going to have to get the ball. Someone's going to have to get the ball to him, and they're going to have to play well behind him. But Bradley's going to be a guy, as I say, who I think is going to kind of hold – he'll hold things together. And these are not over-the-hill guys, Bob. That's the thing. You're getting guys who have a lot left in them. They're not guys playing out the string. It's interesting. You know, I think it's interesting, especially with Bradley. I think it's interesting that they got him.
Well, Bradley, you can argue, is at in the prime of his career.
Yeah.
I don't think you can say that honestly about the other guy, but I'll grant you, you assume he has some miles left in the tank.
Oh, yeah.
But remember, Spurs lost their number one offensive weapon, went to Spain last year. And Defoe winds up no longer a starter. He is the primary goal scorer for a few years with Spurs. Then he relinquishes that spot, and you assume he's going to take it back, but he winds up
As I say, I would. He is in the mold of the. You know, again, there's a lot of enigmatic players in soccer. You know, Fernando Torres, at Chelsea would be the classic example of a guy who, you know, was terrific at Liverpool, scored all kinds of goals. Goes
but
to
everybody
Chelsea.
Hates him, right?
Well, because he did. He went over to Chelsea and they paid him a bucket of money, and then he couldn't score.
Well, this is a problem.
So they do. Those guys they're artists. You know, it's not. Oh. They don't just grind it out. You can't kind of will yourself to score goals. There's kind of a magic that goes with it. But this guy, the level of class, you know, as a player that he was going to bring to the team is going to you're going to notice that. It's like if you watch Thierry Henry play for the New York Red Bulls. It's not like Thierry Henry when he's playing for Arsenal. It's a different guy, or when he's playing for France. But there's just a level of kind of genius with him still that you can still see it. You know, he's slowed down a lot. He doesn't have the kind of the quicks that he used to have. But if you watch him play now, you still say, man, that guy's a class player.
There's no danger of that happening.
So it's going to be fine, Bob.
I won't be watching.
It's going to be great. Then they're going to build the stadium and 40,000 seats. It's going to be a blast. Anyway, I was excited.
Are you on the payroll or what are
you? No, I'm a soccer enthusiast. And I was sitting down there on the beach in Little Cayman when the news came out. And I was very excited.
I'm glad for you.
Yeah, I thought it's quite something. A lot of money. You know, even Lewicki's saying we're never going to make this money back. So it's a really interesting move by ownership, because you could, you know, look, the thing is, you could let an MLS team play out here forever, you know, with its little ups and downs. You're going to, you know, some years you'd be better than others. Eventually you'd make the playoffs. You couldn't be as dreadful as they've been forever. And you'd draw 20,000 people, you know, or 15,000 people. And but that's okay in the MLS.
They're not doing that. They haven't done that this year.
No, it had dropped off. I understand. But I'm saying you could, if you go into survival mode in that league, you still service your core audience, who are the soccer fans. You play in your little stadium there, and it's, you know, it's fine. But these guys have decided to, you know, that's a throwdown. I'm not quite sure I'd do it if I was in ownership.
No, but I think it's also the result of their history and what has happened to the franchise, and great concern that this fan base, which they thought was significant and growing, has dwindled. The television numbers are virtually non-existent.
Yeah, they've never been great, though.
Television numbers are virtually non-existent, but the people in the building, it's not full all the time.
Oh, no. No,
it's not even close to full.
You have to be brain dead to have continued to keep coming. They've done everything to kill the enthusiasm and passion of the people who came to the park.
But, Brent, that's my point. I think you have to take that into consideration, and they look at it and say, are we in danger of losing this thing?
Yeah, except that it's small cheese if you're MLSE, right? It's still small cheese. This is a tiny little part of the empire. And you could have tweaked this thing, or you could have brought in another coach and sold the coach. Coaches are way cheaper than these guys.
Yeah, but I mean, they've done that for the last 6 or 7 years. Brought in players, brought in coaches. Coaches. An endless stream of coaches. An endless stream of general managers and presidents and whatever. I mean, every year has been, here's the next group of saviors, and they fall flat on their faces. And the fan base, of which I am not one, but the fan base had got to a point where they said, enough.
Mm-hmm.
We're not, our patience has worn thin. The product is junk. We're not going anymore. And if you're MLSE, you scratch your head, you sit down and you say, all right, maybe we have to do something really dramatic now.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we risk losing this thing and we'll never be able to get it back, absent a championship. And there was no sign that they were even going to be close to that.
Oh, no.
So the option was, well, I mean, like Pelé's playing anymore.
Well,
let's do what LA did.
Except you're not going to recoup it like they did with Beckham, because they made most of that money back.
No, but there's no other Beckham.
There's no one that's got that kind of the sex appeal thing and the celebrity outside of sport. No, this is a soccer move. You know, this is a soccer move, and to fill a stadium that only holds 20,000 people.
Yeah, but they didn't have an option. It is a soccer move, but they didn't have an option. There isn't another Beckham, superstar, married to a superstar, you know, with superstar kids and blah blah blah.
Yep.
I mean, you know, one of those guys in Spain, Ronaldo or whatever his name is, one of those guys, big name.
Yes.
Big star.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't Beckham, though. You brought him to North America, he wouldn't be Beckham.
No, because Beckham is the guy that people who don't know anything about soccer.
That's it.
Think is a superstar. And there's nothing wrong with it. That's what they bought. They bought his celebrity.
Beckham's a guy who almost throughout his entire soccer career was known to people who've never watched a soccer game because you pick up Hello magazine or this magazine, or you turn on your television set and there he is.
Yeah, and by and large, you're right. If you bring Lionel Messi, you're not going to get that.
There's another good example.
You know, that would be or Frank Ribery or someone like that. No, that's not going to happen.
I mean, these are the greatest players in the world.
They are the guys up for the Ballon d'Or this year, yeah.
But could you get your $100 million back with them? No.
No. No, but I'm just saying, Bob, they could have done a kind of a half measure here. They could have brought in one designated player, and they instead have gone, like, this is a big, big commitment from ownership. You know, and again, I think it's going to work, but so the...
We're going to have a nice long chat about
it. But the payoff, the ultimate payoff is you fill a 20,000 seat MLS stadium. You're right. Never going to see your money back.
Yeah. When is the general manager going to join us? Any moment? Oh, he's there now? We have him?
We can talk soccer with him?
That's excellent. I don't know if he's a soccer fan. He might be. He's a Greek boy. Here's the managing general of the Toronto Blue Jays, Alex Anthopoulos. Tikanis.
Hello. I'm not necessarily a soccer fan. I appreciate, respect the sport. I have a lot of family. Like you said, Greeks love soccer.
Yeah, Greeks love soccer.
Yeah, they love it, and they're not necessarily baseball fans, but I never got into it. I just never had time.
That is interesting, though. I mean, because culturally, there's nothing. It has been my experience, Anthopoulos, I'm married to a Greek girl, that... the Greeks are very strong with their heritage. I guess most European countries are. But you know, like, if it is it's Greek, it's great, right?
You're right. Baseball.
And how did you manage to extricate yourself from that, you know, that soccer culture?
Well, growing up in Canada helps. Growing up in Montreal helps.
Yes.
And I think the fact that... I was assimilated. Like, I mean, we're sure my father was born in Greece. My mother was born in Canada, but her parents were born in Greece. And, you know, it's the people you hang out with, schools you go to, all that kind of stuff. And
I guess.
It wasn't as big. But, you know, I do think that, I do have, I guess it's older members of my family got into soccer a little bit more. And the tough part, too, is growing up just from a media standpoint, you don't get the exposure. I mean, I know now you can watch the Premier League and things
That's
like
true.
That. But when I was growing up, we didn't have any of that.
No, you're right. I mean, I think if you had grown up specifically with your cultural background, if you know, we fast forward 30 years and you're a 10-year-old today, much greater chance that you're in front of the TV watching soccer every Saturday, right?
Completely agree. Mm-hmm. My family, they would have had it on and watched. You had to get I remember they would go to like the Greek bars and Park Extension in Montreal to go watch a soccer game on a Saturday, Sunday. And obviously I was too young to go in there, so I didn't really get into it.
All right, let's get to some baseball talk. One of the things, before we get to specifics, one of the things Brent and I were talking about in the last few minutes, I said to him, I wonder how the organization feels about bats off the bench. Because as I look at this roster and the way you put it together last year, and we don't know what it's going to look like at the end of this offseason, but one of the pieces that I would like to see you look at is a player who can pinch hit, an offensive player to be there in late innings to be a bat, not that worried about his field. Now, maybe it's your fourth outfielder, but circumstances may dictate that you can't do that. I'm wondering if this is something you think about, have contemplated, is a priority, is not a priority?
No, it is, actually. And you're right. It's not something that's ever in the forefront media-wise because they're not exciting moves, but yeah. It's actually something we've talked about a lot. The bench is underrated. It's important not only for in-game but also depth when guys do go down. And you know, we've actually been having a lot of dialogue. I was on the line with an agent last night of a player who's been an everyday player in his career for quite a bit of time and has made some money and is, you know, still wants to get playing time, and but ultimately the market's kind of collapsed on him a little bit. And you know, the issue is it's not even financial so much as he wants to try to go somewhere where he can get the most playing time because he wants to set himself up for the following year. So it's tough sometimes to find the fits, but you do normally this is the time of year. You get to mid to late January, and guys didn't find jobs, and you might be able to pluck someone that can help your bench. And the other one, too, is at the end of spring training, guys that are out of options, people make some decisions based on a spring training look, and an established player might get squeezed out because they had a bad spring. And you could pick guys up at the end of spring as well. But there's no question the bench is definitely it's an important place for us. And you know, specifically, I would say a right-handed bat that can platoon with Lind, a backup center fielder right now just to protect. We don't know how Cabrera is going to look. We think he's going to look good, but we have to protect ourselves there. So those are two areas that we're having dialogue, even on some smaller trade stuff as well.
But you're going to – the options issue is going to be one for you too, right, Alex? Because Gose is out of options, right?
No, Gose is not.
Gose is not. Sierra's out of options.
Sierra's out of options.
Sierra's out of options.
He's the only one that – and that's why even though he's been an outfielder his entire career – we had him just take some ground balls in the winter in the Dominican League at first base just to see, you know, does it give him a better chance to make this club? And look, I didn't know what we were going to get in Sierra at the end of the year, and he played so well in September, and he kind of put himself back on the map because the year he had last year in the minors just was not that strong. And he made some adjustments to his stance and his swing, and he really tried to emulate Encarnacion, and to his credit, he tried to basically follow him around and learn from him, and he made adjustments to his swing and his stance, and he had a nice September for us. And I don't know if it's real or not. Sierra's always had tremendous tools, tremendous ability, and he might be a late bloomer. So being out of options, we're going to give him every chance to make this team, but he's not the cleanest fit because he's not a pure center fielder, and he's not someone that historically has been a guy that really performs well against left-handers. But that might start to change, so we'll take a look.
He's a left-handed bat, if I remember, isn't he?
Right-handed bat.
He is a right-handed bat?
Yeah, but he's never necessarily been the dominant hitter versus lefties. He's kind of been solid against both. And, you know, just someone that, you know, you wish his on-base percentage was better and things like that. And he walked more in a month up here at the big league level than he did in the minor leagues pretty much the entire year that he was down there. So it just seemed like his whole game changed, and it was really surprising. It was great to see.
No, we had a conversation about him the other day, and, I mean, he played himself into the conversation at the very least. So when we think of that 25th guy, a bat off the bench, you don't usually think of a player who hasn't made it in the major leagues and is still relatively young, but could he be that guy?
He could. He could. And, you know, the other issue is to start the season, is it a four-man bench? Is it a three-man bench? We do have right now too many relievers with respect to guys that are out of options that we like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, assuming if no one was to get hurt and no one was to fall off performance-wise, you know, what would we do in the bullpen? Would we, to try to keep our depth, would we go with an eight-man pen for the first week or two until things shook out, whether it's performance or health? Things change fast. So guys like Redman, Jeffress, Louis Perez, you know, those guys are all out of options. And then you factor in guys like Rogers, Cecil, Delabar, Loop, Santos, Chance, and I mean, that's too many relievers. Mm-hmm. And then guys like Neil Wagner who have options left that right now probably going to get squeezed out because we don't want to lose that depth. So it's going to be interesting, and you know we'll take the best team, but we have to be mindful of the depth as well. And I think this will all really be settled in spring training, and some players that are available now will still be available in spring training, and some of these battles will really change things.
The Kershaw deal, Alex, what's that say? There's a lot of money floating around in this sport right now, and I know some of that. I know there's some new television money came into the economy this season, but you know, is that a deal that resets the marketplace?
I don't think so at all, and I was actually asked that today. And the reason, I think for those special, special elite players, and he's as special and elite as you're going to find, 25 years old, ERA title 2 or 3 years in a row, 2 Cy Youngs, almost had a third, finished in second place. He's such an anomaly and an outlier. It's very similar to when Ryan Howard was awarded that $10 million salary, first-time salary arbitration, and it was by far the highest salary ever awarded. Everyone said, wow, is this going to really prove to be inflationary in salary arbitration? But no one else most likely is going to look like Ryan Howard, where their first 3 years in the league, they're on playoff teams, they're home run champions, they're MVPs. And I think Kershaw is just going to be moved to the side the same way Felix Hernandez or Verlander. All those deals, even though Clayton Kershaw's is a little higher, when you're getting into the 175, 190, 200, you're in the same boat. But it's not the first time we've seen deals at $200 million in baseball. It's just the first time we've seen it for a starter. But it's hard to say that we're going to see someone else come along at this age with that success. So I don't think it has an impact.
But it's 7 years and not 10.
Yeah, but if I'm Scott Boras or his ilk, wouldn't I say all of the boats just rose a little bit here? There's no comparable to Kershaw in the marketplace, but that's what the best. There's what the gold standard is for starting pitchers now. Don't all of our boats rise a little bit?
I think you can say that, but I think you also can line up and say, well, look at the other large deals that have been signed, and you take Clayton Kershaw, and then you take Felix Hernandez, and you take Verlander, and even though a guy like Felix is obviously very young, Verlander, I think, signed for 175 last yes. spring or whatever it was, and he's a little bit older. They're both outstanding. It's like taking the Joey Votto deal of 3 years ago, and I think there's it's one outlier, and there's 5 or 10 more deals of players that look similar to other players in the free agent market or other players that people have under control. That as much as you want to talk about one guy in Clayton Kershaw, on the club side or another side, I could say, well, I have 10 players that are much more relevant. And I think you can just move Clayton Kershaw off to the side because no one's going to look like this guy. Or the likelihood is it's 10 or 20 years down the road.
With Alex Anthopoulos, where are you at on Tanaka? Have you had conversations?
We've had conversations on every available via free agency and even trade. Starter that we believe to be mid to front of the rotation. We've had dialogue, and you know, I know you love how I'm so vague on this stuff, but we've had dialogue, and to go any further than that, I wouldn't, but safe to say that without being specific about the player, anyone who we think is mid to upper rotation, we've had dialogue with the agents and done our work on it, and we're going to see if we can get something to fit.
It's been suggested, not by me, but by others, that the organization's position as of today, maybe has been for a while, is that if you can get a pitcher in a certain financial range that you're comfortable with, you'd make that move. Otherwise, you don't think it's the end of the world going to camp with what you had last year plus the guys you got coming back off injury.
I think that's fair. And that's not to say that there's other guys in trade that, like I think I mentioned this today, there's a few free agents that we have the ability to sign them tonight. We know what the asking price is. If I called the agents up and said, look, we'll do that deal, pending obviously an examination, they would be Toronto Blue Jays. And there's a few players in trade that, knowing what the asking price is, if I was to call that club back and there's another club as well, and say, look, we're prepared to meet the asking price. Those would get done. So I think the players that we've talked about in trade will be available come spring training. They'll be available during the year. I wouldn't expect that to change. Of course it can, but I don't expect it to. And free agency-wise, there's a lot of other information on some of these players that not everyone has, health concerns. Obviously, there's different things involved in makeup and so on, and that factors into your price point and your value of the player. So, we do have a value on the player, and if we can get those players at that price, we will do it, but we're not going to force a move and do what we would deem to be a bad move or a significant overpay just for the sake of doing it.
But to paraphrase that, I think what I'm hearing is, yes, we'd be prepared to go back to camp with what exists right now. Secondly, the asking price, whether it's through free agency or through trade, right now is still too high.
Correct. Right now, I think that's very accurate to say. And just judging from January, the 1st of January to now, the prices have changed over a two-week period. And I would expect, and we'll obviously find out over the next week to 2 weeks, they'll continue to change, both up and down, but they'll continue to change.
How does the deadline with Tanaka, how does that affect the process? It's got to be a different process than a standard free agent.
Yeah, it certainly does. It's like probably the same way as salary arbitration. Anytime, generally speaking, two things get deals done, momentum and deadlines. And obviously, deadlines are very important because – ultimately, a lot of times, you could be sitting at the winter meetings and you'll get a call from an agent saying, look, we're getting really close, we need to move. And that's obviously an attempt to get a club to move. And sometimes a deal gets done and sometimes all of a sudden 3 weeks later and guy still hasn't signed and you'd be on the phone and said, I thought you told me 3 weeks ago it was getting close. And they say something ended up falling apart. Well, in the case of a guy like Tanaka where you do have a 24th deadline to sign, there's no bluffing involved in the fact a deal is getting done. One way or the other, a deal is getting done. He will either be a signed player, unless he was to go back, but he will be a signed player. So I think it helps in order to get a deal done. I think the closer you get, the conversations become more real. And obviously there's not a lot of days left, but everyone knows that this thing's going to be over relative to the other free agents. Who knows how long it goes? They can go a month more, and that's been highlighted by last year guys like Kyle Loesch signing at the end of March and guys like Michael Bourne signing at the end of February.
How do you evaluate Tanaka? How do you look at 24-0, sub-2 ERA, with what he's got, with his ammunition, kind of a normal-sized, average-sized pitcher. I mean, he's not 6'4 and, 220 with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. He's a guy, but he gets guys out in a league that isn't the majors. So what is he? How do you evaluate him?
Well, no, that's fair, and it's not the easiest thing to do. And, you did mention he's not a 98-mile-an-hour fastball guy, and he certainly doesn't pitch there. He's more of, at least in our reports, more of a guy that'll sit 93, but we actually had him touch 98 twice.
Oh, really?
At the end of the year, just touch it. But, I could tell you, Brandon Morrow will touch 98 or 99, but he won't pitch at that level. So, but no, I think you do a few things. One, you're looking for guys that have been in that league, and everyone knows the Japanese players that have come over. You certainly start there. Then you're looking for guys with similar stuff, similar body types. That's all part of it. You're taking a scouting report and looking at what type of stuff he has. If he's striking guys out, what is he striking guys out with? How do the scouting reports match to that? The interesting thing about the Japanese league this past year is that the balls were but I guess they were altered a little bit to increase the offense, and obviously that was a big story. So that influences the numbers a little bit for this past year. But I think it's all about comparables, and then obviously factoring in what you see with a scout's eye and delivery, and then obviously you're getting medical information on the player, and you put that all in a pot, and you're trying to come up with what value you think the guy has.
Easier to project a Darvish because of his style than maybe a Tanaka or a Matsuzaka, for that matter, a few years ago?
I don't know that it's easier, and I think Darvish isn't necessarily easier because rarely will you find Japanese players that are that big, and
well, of course,
Darvish is half Iranian, and that's—I don't know that it's easier. I mean, everyone would prefer a bigger, stronger guy, and most times everyone leans to size, and that obviously points to durability and things like that. But obviously, you can go the other way, and there's the Pedro Martinez's or the Greg Maddox's or guys that aren't that big that pitched a long time and pitched a lot of innings. So, I think you're looking at guys like Dice K, that you're looking as much for guys with similar body types, maybe guys like Kuroda, guys like Iwakuma, anyone that's really, guys like Koji Uehara, who's a little more slightly built and has had success as a reliever rather than a starter. And you're trying to put it all together relative to age, innings, stuff, league, what the competition is at the time. I think the fact that these guys have competed at the World Baseball Classic has helped tremendously because we've had a chance to see them against, varied competition, and that's something that all the teams have scouted these guys. We've got film, velocities, all that stuff. So it's not easy, but for the most part, I think everyone agrees these guys are talented. They're very capable of performing at a very high level here, and ultimately he's trying to come up with a price point that makes sense.
Do you think in the end it's going to come right, it'll go right down to the wire, and do you think if that's the case that you will at least be on the phone with somebody the last day?
too hard to tell because this is the first time with this type of player that the process has been set up like this, where it's free agency. In the past, with a posting fee, you had exclusive negotiating rights to the player. It wasn't like you would get off the phone with the agent and the agent could call the other team and play one off the other. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's fair to say that most times when you do have a deadline, they always go to the wire. It always seems to be that way. Just even when you look at the post, when there was no free agent component and Dice K could only negotiate with the Boston Red Sox, Yu Darvish could only negotiate with the Texas Rangers. Mm. Both times, it basically went down to the wire. So based on the past, I think you'd have to think that. But again, if it was done a day before, I wouldn't be surprised.
How about the you on the phone the last day part of that question?
I tried to dodge that. I have no idea. I really don't, and we'll see. And, you know, you guys did a good job of just having me start with saying, you know, I'm not going to talk about specific players and spend about 10 minutes on one guy.
Is Dice K signed with the Mets?
I read something that supposedly he had, and then the Mets have come out and said that he didn't. So from what I understand, no, unless that changed. But I've been so caught up in salary arbitration this week, I haven't really checked the computer to see if anything changed.
Any interest?
Right now, no. It's not someone that we've engaged or had dialogue in. We haven't really signed any minor league free agent starters. You know, we're pretty deep in that department. I think if we do add a starter, we're going to look for someone a little more established in terms of current performance and that mid to upper rotation type guy.
We're still tapping our foot. We're waiting for something. Let us know when you get around to it.
You'll be my first call.
Alex, thanks a lot, pal. Right, we'll talk to you again. Bye-bye. Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Some interesting stuff in that.
Yeah, well, we did our best.
24 before the hour. More baseball talk, albeit brief, when we come back on primetime.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We got to go faster because we're a little tight on time. 15 minutes before the hour. Here's J.P. Morosi of Fox Sports. So how was that outdoor hockey game? Did you go?
It was outstanding. It was outstanding, and I really wish – probably the only thing that would have made it better would have been if you were there.
Yeah, well, I was in front of my television set. I was nice and warm, and I had an adult beverage, and I didn't think of you for 1 second. So.
Well, it was a great day. I love seeing all the great Canadian hockey media come into my hometown for a day, which was excellent to meet everybody. So everybody was great. I had a great time.
I'm glad you did. So does the Kershaw signing change everything? Alex Anthopoulos was just on with us. He doesn't think so. He thinks, and I made this comment yesterday, I think it may piss Verlander off a little bit. And there's a small group of guys, maybe there's only two, but could be a couple more that you'd throw in there. It maybe moves the needle for them. But for everybody else, not so much. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. And I agree with Alex on this, Bob. And to me, this was just the next logical step in where this market was going. I think that you saw, obviously, where Verlander got last year. It was very, very close to $200 million. And really, I think it was just, when you talk about Kershaw's age, that's the big thing. You know, we ask that sort of eternal question, is the guy worth it? Well, dollar for dollar, is this going to be completely worthwhile? Who knows? But if you're going to buy up the 7 years of any pitcher, it should be this pitcher for these years. Starting, the guy's only 25 years old. So I think when you look at which years you're buying, it actually does make a lot more sense. And I think really Verlander almost got the market to this point where a $200 million pitcher is shocking. So I think this was just kind of that next little bit over at the top. To me, Bob, I think the real game changer will come whenever Mike Trout signs his mega deal, which based on where he's typically been, you have to wonder, is he going to be that first $300 million a year, $300 million player. So I think obviously we're far away from that, but right now you'd have to guess he's got an inside track of being that guy.
Let's just drop down several levels from Kershaw, JP, to the three guys, the three starting pitchers who are kind of the top of the market this year. So you've got Garza, Santana, and Jimenez. None of them have signed. When Anthopoulos was on with us a minute ago, Alex was on a minute ago, he alluded to, you know, vaguely, not directly about these guys, to health concerns, that there are maybe some issues with some of the guys on the market that are scaring teams off. I have reason to believe that among those three guys, that's where some of the health concerns lie. Have you heard that? And are you surprised, you know, even with the, I know Tanaka and setting the market and all that, that none of these guys have gone anywhere yet?
Well, I think you raise a lot of good points there, Steve. And I think, first of all, yes, there have been, I think, different health situations with all three of those guys that you mentioned, Jimenez, Garza, and certainly Santana as well, earlier in their careers. Not so much this past year, but in the past. I mean, obviously, Ubaldo Jimenez has what a lot of people would say is a very intricate delivery, to say the least. I think one that might not necessarily be conducive to staying healthy in the long term. The other thing I kept hearing, and I'm just, you know, here at the owners' meeting, so just leaving Phoenix right now, but the thing I kept hearing from teams is the draft pick. And in fact, Artie Moreno said to me on the record, he said, we cannot afford to give up a draft pick. We want to upgrade our rotation. We can't afford to give up a pick. They did that for Hamilton. They did it for Pujols. Their farm system's in bad shape, so they need that draft pick. And I believe them. I believe that's the case. So if that's the case, that's why you're saying, okay, I can't get Santana, I can't get Jimenez, because that would be a draft pick. But in the case of Garza and even Bronson Arroyo, it's interesting. I've heard his name now linked to the Dodgers and even the Orioles, an American League team, American League East team at that. But just because he's a durable guy who does not have any sort of does not have any sort of draft pick competition attached to him, so I think that's going to be a big, big thing for teams going forward.
See, guys, if I'm the Blue Jays, the thing that would scare me the most right now would be signing one of these guys and having their arm explode in May. You know, just because of all of the other stuff, I would rather, if I'm them, I would rather take my chances with what I've got if I thought that there were real, you know, if there was a red flag, a health red flag with any of those guys.
Well, and that's a great point, Stephen. And I would say when you talk about the rest of the market, Samardzija, if he's really truly available in trade, and I do think there have been some conversations between the Jays and the Cubs about Samardzija. When you talk about health, if you were going to line all these guys up, I would say Samardzija is probably a safer bet than those free agents we've been talking about. Arroyo, of course, is more of a National League guy at this point in time, but he's been pretty durable for the last 8-10 years. So, but I think you're absolutely right, because to me, the Jays have enough guys that you're kind of hoping on and praying on for their health. I think that's the case for Hutchinson, Drabek, Morrow, on down the line, talented right-handed pitchers with good stuff and checkered health history. So I think adding more guys of that type doesn't really get you any closer to the goal, which is reliability. And I think the Yankees are a team that, frankly, that they need, at the very least, one more Major League starting pitcher. They don't love the rest of the group, but I think you could take the Jays' reservations about that Santana, Jimenez, Garza class. The Yankees have them all, too. It's the same situation, American League East, hitter-friendly park, checkered health histories a little bit. That's why the Yankees are being so aggressive after Tanaka. I'll be honest, I have not heard the Jays linked that much to Tanaka from a real substantive standpoint. I keep hearing Cubs, Yankees, Dodgers. I do think he'll go to one of those three teams, but as we all know, the Jays pitching still needs to get upgraded here at some point in time soon.
Lots of speculation, but that's what we do at this time of year. Thank you as always, JP. We'll look forward to talking to you soon as we wind it up, and spring training is set to begin in just a few weeks' time.
Sounds great, and still a lot of free agents out there. So the hot stove is still going, and Bob, we'll make plans to cover the next Winter Classic together, okay?
You just keep talking. John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports. In the next hour, Don Banks of SI on the last two weekends of the National Football League season. This one, two games. The next one, one. And Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada. That's coming up when Primetime Sports continues. You're listening on the Sportsnet Radio Network, watching on Sportsnet Television.